Hello once again, and welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair this afternoon. Gordon Fricke is here. Gordon is owner and operator of Barber & Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service industry for over 30 years. He knows his stuff, and we always have a good time having Gordon on the show. We welcome your calls. 800-348-2551 is the number, 1-800-348-2551. You can also post comments at the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website. It's wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment below today's Vox Pop wall post on our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop. Why, you can even email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But we love your calls. 800-348-2551 is the number. And Gordon, welcome back.
Thank you, Ray. Good to be back.
Spring is here. We get ready to do some serious driving, at least in my neck of the woods. And what should I be preparing now on the vehicle?
Boy, I'll tell you, have you driven on any roads other than interstates lately?
Ah, the potholes.
Oh, my God. I had to go down to Connecticut the other day, and Route 22 in a fairly large truck was an absolute disaster. There are holes and ruts and dips and heaves everywhere.
Yep.
I predict it's going to take cars are going to be taking a beating this spring.
Which is, frankly, not bad for business, eh?
Well, it does tend to wear and break things, but it's tough. It's tough on the vehicles, that's for sure.
And not just on the tires, but everything from the suspension and everything else.
From the tires on up, the tires, the wheels, bearings, tie rod ends, springs, everything, suspension.
How do you get around it? Don't drive?
What do you do? I don't know, because it reaches a point where you can't avoid them. You just have to slam through some of them.
Yeah, and, you know, people in my town know where they are on one of the two main roads, and everyone goes about 2 miles an hour for that little stretch where the water has, you know, there's a lot of standing water. I guess that's what causes them.
Yeah, good speed bumps in a residential neighborhood, right?
Not bad at all. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Eric in Clifton Park, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
Good morning. Or good afternoon, I guess.
Good evening.
Yeah, I got a question, actually. It's suspension related. Got a Tacoma, an 05, and it's a farm truck. I put about 500 pounds of feed on the back, and I noticed that you go over any of some of those bumps and things, and I'm hearing it, or I'm feeling it really bottom out. So I know the springs are kind of shot from being overloaded a lot. So I don't know whether I should just put in a couple of additional one arch spring, or take out the springs and try to get them re-arched, or what's the best course of action?
Okay. Sure. What year is the truck, Eric?
05.
05, okay.
93,000.
There's a couple of things you can do. If this truck is constantly loaded, you can beef up the springs and you'll have a stiff rear suspension all the time. If the truck is driven for other uses and is not heavily loaded all the time, there are some spring aids that you can put in there that will take the load when necessary, but leave you on your normal springs when you don't need it. And there's a company that makes them. I think it's called Timmerman. And these are called composite springs. And they're a material that's, I'm sure, has some rubber in it and other things. But they fit between your rear axle and your frame. And what happens is when you load the truck to the point where your stock springs are sagged, probably about halfway down, these composite springs will take over, and they will handle that heavy load. And they actually do a very nice job, and they're original equipment on heavy and medium-duty trucks. The flatbed truck that I have, it's a car carrier flatbed, and it's got these from the factory, and they're excellent because when you're fully loaded, you're on those composite springs. When you're not fully loaded, you're on your normal springs.
Mm.
So I would look into that. That's the easiest thing to do.
Composite springs, okay.
Yep, and they're just an add-on.
Eric, thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551. We go to Jim in Adams, Mass. Jim, you're next.
Yay, Ray. How you doing today?
How you doing?
All right. This Mr. Fricke, I talked to you about this vehicle, I think when you first started doing these programs some while back. 1961 British Land Rover, four-cylinder, gas-fueled, and it's been sitting unturned over, unrun for a good 20, 25 years at minimum. Freeing that engine up, maybe taking out the spark plugs and screwing some rust solvent in there or some motor oil or both. It also has a hand crank, if I can locate it or get another one if I haven't got it located. You can crank the engine over by hand as well even. What's your advice on this situation?
So it is currently seized. You can't...
I don't know if it is or not.
You don't. Okay.
I don't know if it is or not. It could be not. Even.
Here's something that has worked well for years, and it's been around forever. It's called Marvel Mystery Oil.
Oh, yeah.
Comes in quarts and different size jugs, but that stuff is nice because you can put it in the... You can take out the spark plugs and pour it in the cylinders.
Mm-hmm.
You can pour it down the carburetor. Uh-huh. You can pour it...
With no ill effects?
Put it in the
oil
pan as well.
You can you can mix it with the engine oil and you can mix it with the gasoline.
Wow.
Yep.
Maybe you can do a shot of it yourself. I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, I'm just kidding.
Hey.
Hey.
But yes, I
would be known as Marvel Man. Then.
Yeah. Well, let's not suggest that. Our legal department suggests that we do not do that.
No, I'm.
But yes, that's what I would do.
Facetious remarks.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would
excellent.
Pour that stuff in, and of course, if you've poured a lot of it in the cylinders. Don't attempt to turn the engine over with the spark plugs in because you don't want a hydraulic lock. You want to get that thing freed up and turning with the starter or the crank, you know.
Yep.
So that's what I would do.
Excellent.
All right.
I'll bring it over when I get it on the road and get it restored.
There you go.
Thanks, Jim. How do you get the stuff out of your car once you put it in?
Well, in terms of putting it in the cylinders, if let's say you got the engine free, you would then slowly turn it over. And the pistons would rise up in the cylinders and push the stuff out the spark plug holes.
Amazing.
So you would just keep turning it over and turning it over and turning it over. And then the majority of the liquid would be out. And then you'd attempt to start it. And then it's going to smoke like crazy.
Even if you put it in the gasoline?
You can mix it with it. There's a mixing quantity, but you can mix it in with the gas. And it acts as an upper lube and an upper cleaner.
Wow.
It really is a good stuff for the right purpose.
And it's not really a mystery. You know what it is, right?
I don't know. It says mystery on the can.
All right, so you're not telling. Let's go to Tim in Boston Spa. Tim, you're on.
Not only does Marvel Mystery Oil work well, but it smells really nice. Anyhow, I used to own an auto repair shop, and I'm wondering if Gordon has had any similar experiences with people calling up to make appointments. For instance, you get a call, hello, this is June, Dr. Stillman's secretary. He'd like to schedule an appointment for the car. I said, oh, fine. What's it need? I said, just a minute. So she goes and asks, comes back after a while. Well, it needs a service, and it's making a noise. Well, do you know if it's a big service or... And what kind of a noise is it? And this can go on endlessly. And if only the doctor had called himself.
Yes.
But anyhow.
So is this why you're no longer in the business, Tim?
No, I retired.
Oh, okay. All right.
I always like to have as much information as possible when scheduling somebody.
Yeah, I think what you're getting at is correct. It's The first stage of the repair is getting the information from the customer and digesting that into what you think he thinks is wrong with the car, and then you're the one that's going to determine what's really wrong with it, if it'll answer his complaint.
How accurate are the callers? In other words, in general, do you get a good sense in advance of what the problem is based on a verbal description, or do most people have no idea?
The easiest,
it varies widely.
Yeah. The easiest ones are when I step on the brake pedal, I hear a horrendous grinding noise.
Yes. That was me.
Usually that's pretty easy to diagnose, but it's the noises, the problems, the running problems, the intermittent noises that have to be demonstrated to the mechanic or somebody that can realize what that problem might be to go through and diagnose it. And that's where a lot of time gets wasted and a lot of wrong diagnosis might happen. So it's very important. It's like going to the doctor and not giving them all the information and expecting a cure.
Yeah, Tim, thanks a lot for the call. You know, with doctors, I think, find the internet to be a colossal thorn in the side because people self-diagnose and then come to the doctors. Does this happen in the automotive repair industry?
Yes, and it's funny you say that because I've got some doctors as customers. And, you know, one of them will bring his car in and he'll say, now, I checked on something, website that has to do with this particular car, and by no means am I telling you this is what it is, but this is what they're, this is what I'm seeing a lot of. Maybe that's what it is. And I said, I'm sure you get patients with the same thing. He said, everybody's on WebMD.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it must give the doctor a certain amount of perverse satisfaction to be able to turn that around and diagnose his vehicle for you.
Yeah. And sometimes that information is absolutely right on, and other times it isn't. And that's what we have to sort through.
Indeed. Hey, Zach, let's take a break here. The number to call is 1-888-34-No, hang on. Let's try it again. 1-800-348-2551. Yes, that's the number. 800-348-2551. Hey, Gordon Fricke's here. Might as well call.
Support comes from Barry Price Architecture since 1996, specializing in buildings that integrate modernism and sustainability with regional materials and aesthetics. BarryPriceArchitecture.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst, since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. St. Joseph School, Uptown Kingston, an academy of arts and sciences offering pre-K, elementary, and middle school placements for fall 2014. Daily tours of the historic Uptown campus. Joyful learning guided by faith. StJosephSchoolKingston.com. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts. Offering lawn and garden equipment, parts, and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts. A family-owned business for over 50 years. BoydenAndPerrin.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. What's that number, Ray? I'm going to write it down so I remember. It's 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we go back to the phones. Amanda in Amherst, you're on. No. What's wrong with me, Zach? Yeah, let me press the button now. Amanda, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I have a 94 Volvo 940 wagon. It's an old, slow poke kind of car. And when I'm stopped at a stop sign, it just seems to shake and rattle to the point, you know, my husband took it in to the mechanic. They can't figure out what it is, but it sounds like there's just metal. It's just going. Is there a way I can put plastic in or rubber somewhere to just even it out, or is it most likely an idle kind of thing?
That is good outside-the-box thinking, Amanda. I don't know if you can do it, but I like the way you're thinking.
Well, I guess the question is, does it feel as though or does it want to stall? Are the RPMs too low? And that car, I believe, has a tachometer in it.
Yeah. So
Is that tachometer needle still usually where you're accustomed to seeing it, or it is way lower than usual when you feel that engine making all that noise?
It's where it always is. It always seems to be running, I don't know, right under 1,000
So
but it's always done this.
So maybe your idle speed is okay. So you're concerned about the rattling noises.
Yeah, because I don't like it.
Can you hear that from outside the car or under the car, those rattling noises?
You know, I've never tested it. It always just bugs me when I'm driving it, so.
What you need to do is see if you can duplicate that sound and have somebody, your husband or somebody, be outside of the car and try to pinpoint where the noise is coming from. And it's possible that it's exhaust-related, could be exhaust shielding. There's a lot of metalwork around the exhaust system for heat purposes, heat shielding. and they make tons of noises on lots of cars as they age. So it's gonna require some pinpointing.
Okay.
But that's what I would do.
And of course, there's always the internet, Amanda, so you can do that as well.
Oh yeah.
Thanks a lot for the call. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is here. Let's press the button. Eric in Massachusetts in the car. Are you hands-free in the car, Eric?
Yes, I am.
You're all set. A very good connection for in the car. Go ahead.
Oh, good. Well, I have a 99 Isuzu Trooper, and I've had it, the original owner. And the past, I don't know, 3 or 4 years when I actually had to use the four-wheel drive, it's got the TOD, the pod, torque on demand system. I went to use it. I live in North Carolina now, and I went to use it for the first time in 10 years, and it wasn't working. So then I got it after meddling with it for a while, that started working again. But now, a couple years later, the rear, I'm on the little all-wheel drive little diagram thing they give you on the front of the dash, the rear wheel lights are blinking. And I don't know if it's low, maybe it just needs something as simple as low transmission fluid, but you can't check it. It's a sealed system, or if that's indicative of a more serious problem. I don't know. Have you had any experience with the Troopers?
Yeah, you know, I haven't seen those in quite a long time. And I think it was, I think the drive system was the same as, trying to think of what that other, Rodeo, Isuzu Rodeo was a smaller vehicle Isuzu made. So yours does not have the lever on the floor to shift it in and out of four-wheel drive.
Well, no, it has that too. It has the, that's for the low four-wheel drive, and then the high is kind of, it's more of an all-wheel drive. The torque has been higher than needed.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, that system is digitally controlled or by a computer, and that's what that flashing light is all about. So it really needs to get diagnosed, and being a 99, I don't know if you've got to go somewhere where they're accustomed to plugging those vehicles in, because I don't know if you can get the all-wheel drive data from the normal data link or not on that. So it's going to have to go in and get diagnosed. And those systems do, they like to be exercised. They like to be used. So everything that is required to engage the four-wheel drive gets used periodically. So if it's been out of service for years, that could be what's going on. You know, there are still things that are engaging when you select the four-wheel drive, and that's what's happening there.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I thought. It's our third car, and it kind of sits now. I don't run as much as I used to, and that's when I started noticing some of these little lights going on when I use it periodically. So, okay.
All right.
So, now, yeah, that's the other problem. So, there's no Isuzu isn't sold in North America anymore. So, any suggestions of what kind of a mechanic I should find to service it?
Well, you could see if you had any Isuzu dealers that transition into other things but are still servicing them. So
okay.
You're going to have to do a bit of a search on Isuzu service and see what's out in your area.
Specifically tough, or can a standard professional do that?
No, they're not particularly, they're not any more complicated than anything else. It's being accustomed to the vehicle. There's still plenty of repair information available for them. So
how about parts?
Yeah, you know, I don't see that many of them anymore, but I don't think there's a major shortage, but I could be wrong.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Gordon Fricke is our guest. Dave and Rensselaer, you're on.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Gordon, I've got a question about a 2002 Volkswagen TDI Jetta. It's never had its timing chain or its timing belt changed.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
How many miles are on the car now?
178,000.
And your shirt's never been changed?
Yeah, I'm positive.
I wouldn't even drive it home.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Now you're on borrowed time. Now I think you can drive it home, but if it's never been changed yet, it's out of time by the calendar and also way over on the recommended mileage to have that changed.
By like double.
Yeah, they say it's 90,000, but again, on websites I've read that some people have it 275,000 that they've never changed. There's a lot of variance, but
yeah. Here's the danger. If the belt or the water pump or any the tensioner that the belt drives over, if any of those decides it's time to check out and the belt comes off the pulleys or brakes, that you'll suffer serious engine damage. Very serious. Okay. The diesels, there's less tolerance between the pistons and the valves on the diesel than around the gas engine, so it's very bad when that happens. So I think if you're certain that that's the original belt, you really should be having it done right away, because it's going to fail, and if it does, it's going to be horrible.
Okay.
Sorry, Dave.
All righty. Yeah. Thank you.
Good luck getting home. Don in Pittsfield. Don.
Hi, guys. I'm calling about my 2009 Buick Enclave. We just got it a few months ago. It's got under 25,000 miles on it, and last week it threw an engine code of P0018, crankshaft position sensor, correlation bank 1, sensor A, and I read the code, I cleared it, and I drove it for a while, and it came back on. So I was out of town. When I got home, I took it to the Buick dealer at the recommendation of my local shop, and they ran a road test on it last night. Or night before, and kept it overnight, tried it again the next day, and they said they were checking the variable camshaft timing and that it worked and passed both times. They cleared the code, and I took the car home, and today I drove it, and the engine light's back on.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a semi-common scenario nowadays, unfortunately, and sometimes the code that we extract from the computer doesn't necessarily mean that's the unit or that's the part that has to be changed. It's leading you in the area of the problem. There is the chance that the crankshaft position sensor is having problems. Is this vehicle still under factory warranty?
No, it's not.
What year is it?
It's 2009.
Okay, yeah, so it's out by the time, because your miles are very low.
Yeah. Yeah, we thought we were lucky getting the car. You know, it's in beautiful shape.
Yeah.
It's like new.
Here's one thing to keep in mind. A lot of components that have effects on emissions that turn on the check engine light sometimes have more coverage than the basic warranty. And I'm sure you've probably already asked your dealer if this is the case, but what I think needs to happen is, now that the light is back on, I would bring it back to the dealership. And this is going to be, you know, they did some things. They cleared it, and the computer self-checked and found it all over again. And now see what the results are going to be.
But is the crankshaft position error something that is related to emissions?
It can be, because it can make the engine not run correctly. And if the engine doesn't run correctly, the theory is that it's polluting or emitting more emissions than it should. And that's bad for the environment. That turns on the check engine light. That makes you bring it in.
But now, wait a minute. The only reason a check engine light is going to go on is if there is an emissions problem?
Most of the reasons for the light being commanded on are not only running problems, but potential emissions issues. And the two overlap each other. And there's a little gray area, because there are some check engine light codes that come on that we know really doesn't have any effect on emissions, but that's the way it's been tied into the system.
Yeah, okay.
But if you do have a failing crankshaft position sensor, that's the type of thing that can leave you stranded or fail to start the engine. So you definitely need to stay with it and get it resolved.
Okay, we'll give it a shot. I should have mentioned that along with the 018 error, I got some random misfire and specific cylinder errors, 300 for random, and 304, 303, and 306.
Mm-hmm.
And so to the point of the sensor, if there are two sensors, one for each side, I started to wonder that how come I was getting a couple of odd cylinders and one even cylinder.
Yeah, and that's the strange thing with misfires. they don't necessarily have to come from, for example, a lean mixture or bad spark plugs or things like that. They can come from other reasons. And the computer doesn't sometimes know the difference. It just says, well, we've experienced a misfire and we're going to report it.
Yeah.
So you got to get it back.
All right. Thanks, Don. We appreciate the call. So, again, I've often sounded this particular angle, but the guy has a problem with a sensor, a crankshaft position sensor. It's not the crankshaft, it's the sensor. Why not build the car without a sensor?
Can't anymore, because the electronics are controlling everything right down to your windows. So we've gone way past that. The days of the Le Mans, 66 Le Mans are over.
You know, I want to go back to those days. You have roll-up windows and everything else. Sam and Beckett. Sam, you're here.
Hi. My girlfriend has a Jeep Cherokee Sport. I believe it's a 99. It has 315,000 miles on it. So it's got quite a few quirks. But the one that I'm concerned about is sometimes when you put the key in and turn it, like, all the accessory stuff will come on, but it won't want to start. And other times it starts just fine. And when it doesn't start, if you put it in neutral, sometimes it will start. And other times you have to wait, like, 3 or 4 minutes, and then it'll start. And I was wondering if you had any advice on that.
Yeah, so, Sam, what it's doing is it's failing to crank when you turn the key to the crank position. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, nothing, yeah. It's not even trying to turn over or anything.
Yeah, you could have the beginning of a failing starter, because if every time it failed to do that in park and you put it in neutral and it immediately started, and then you put it back in park and it wouldn't start, that's isolating it to the park neutral safety switch. But the fact that it's really not clear that that made any effect on it. It could be the beginnings of a starter failing. It could also be the beginnings of an ignition switch failure. So those two things have to be, and they're not hard to test once the vehicle is doing its thing. If it starts 9 out of 10 times, the mechanic may never catch it failing. But if the 10th time it doesn't start and he can get in there and check it, then it'll be easy to rule out which of the two it is.
Okay. Sorry, can you say again, the start of a starter failure or ignition switch?
Yeah, I'd be suspicious of one of those two components, just based on what you're telling me.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much.
Sam, thank you very much. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Gordon Fricke is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. Charles in Ballston Spa. Charles, you're on.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I've got a Honda Civic, a 2012 Honda Civic, and I recently got my tires aligned, my wheels aligned, and, you know, the place where I got it, they just basically do tires. They don't do much more than that. And they told me that my rear wheel camber is out of alignment by a little over an inch on both sides. So I called up the dealer, and the dealer says, well, there's no adjustment for the camber in the rear wheels. So they're kind of baffled. Before I take my car into the dealership and then pay a bundle for this, do you have any idea about what may be going on here?
Yeah, absolutely. That's not an uncommon issue at all. I'm surprised the dealer was baffled. In fact, there was some recall on Civics, not quite as new as yours, for a rear camber issue in the rear suspension. And there is I'm not sure if Honda offers an adjustable upper rear camber link or control arm, but the aftermarket does. And it's a very nice item. I've installed them before. Again, not in a car as new as a 12, but the Civics have the tendency to have too much negative rear camber. That means the wheels are tipped in too much at the top.
Yep.
And in the aftermarket exists an adjustment for that. But I thought Honda, and I know for the earlier models, they did offer a different control arm for the upper that kicked that wheel out and brought it back into specs. So to answer
that,
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Is it what they call a camber kit?
Yeah, there was. They make a, and again, I'm not sure if it's available for year 12, but I know it's available for Civics, and I think even CRVs. But it is a an adjustable upper control arm, and I don't know if they might call it a camber link, but it allows those back wheels to be kicked out. The tops of them can be okay. moved out to get them back into spec. So it is okay. definitely solvable.
Okay, great.
Charles, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 1-800-348-2551 is our number. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be back with more of your calls coming up.
Support comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havigan Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HaviganWealthStrategies.com. And Mass Mocha, North Adams, Massachusetts, presenting all-girl pop rockers Betty up in the club on March 22nd and Fish bassist Mike Gordon in concert April 5th. MassMocha.org.
Up Jump Spring, appropriate music. Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers on Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show, 1-800-348-2551. Ray Graff here, Gordon Fricke across the desk. He's our automotive expert, and back to the phones we go. Tom in Poughkeepsie. Tom, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I have a 2002 Passat that it's developed a quirk where it's impossible to fill it with gas. It takes like a half hour to fill the whole tank. The pump just keeps clicking off. Any ideas?
Is your check engine light on, Tom?
It was recently for a different issue, but okay. That is all set. Yes.
So it was not on. Was it on for an EVAP issue?
No, it was on for air mass flow or flow something like that. Something okay. that's in the air cleaner.
Yeah, yeah. The reason I ask is if you get certain EVAP codes. One of the valves that allows the vapors to get purged could be stuck. And uh-huh. on some vehicles, that's what allows, with the key off, that's what allows the vapors to come out when you're pumping the gasoline in. That's usually the only issue because I doubt there's an obstruction in the filler neck. But did it just come about suddenly?
Well, it's been doing it. It's like 6 months now. It's been like that.
Yeah, so every time you
and
go
it
to fill
it. And it did come on suddenly, yes.
Yeah. But from that point on, you can't put gas in it at a normal rate?
Not one single time, no.
Okay. Hmm. What I would do, and sometimes there are codes that won't turn on the check engine light that might be related to it. It should get scanned by somebody that has Volkswagen software in their system. And just mm-hmm. see if there's any codes having to do with any of the venting of the tank, because that could answer. You may have a stuck vent valve in there, but that's what I'm guessing is happening.
Okay.
Yeah. Other than the obvious obstructions in there, which again I doubt is the case.
I don't think so. No.
That's probably
what.
What's
happening. Are some of the obvious obstructions?
There really wouldn't, you know.
Super balls or?
Yeah, you know, a beehive in there. But, you know,
really?
That doesn't happen anymore. But, you know, once in a while, in the olden days when you had a lot of external vents,
yeah,
bees would get into these hoses that were just loose under the cars or tucked into the frame.
Yeah.
And they put that muddy mess in there, and then it hardens up, and you have venting issues. But, no, that's something that goes back to the Le Mans days again.
Good luck, Tom. Thanks a lot for the call. We go to Helene in Ashfield, Mass. Helene, you're on. Hello. You're on.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thanks. So I have a 2004 Toyota Matrix, and when I bought it, they told me it does not have a timing belt. Is that correct?
Yeah, that could be. And I without looking up that exact car, but yeah, a lot of the car makers started moving away from the external toothed timing belts to a chain, which is kind of inside of the engine that,
okay,
that doesn't require any maintenance whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
And it'd be very easy to tell simply by looking in your owner's manual, or a mechanic would look under the hood and you'd see how the engine was set up. But I
right,
could be right. And I just,
that was my main question,
yeah,
is how you maintenance a chain. So
yeah, and if it is a chain, you don't have to do anything with it other than keep your oil changed regularly.
Okay, we do that.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Eileen, thanks a lot for the call. So we've talked about this before. It seems like there are nothing but advantages to a timing chain over a belt. Are there any disadvantages?
I guess a disadvantage would be if you were very bad with oil changes and the chain rides against some nylon or plastic guides on most cars.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see those guides wearing out. And when they wear out, sometimes they break. And if they break, if the chain derails, you've got major damage.
So the same problems that occur when a belt breaks and timing belt breaks?
Yep, and possibly more costly, because not only can pistons hit valves, but now you've got timing chain components and gears and sprockets that's under engine covers, which is much more time consuming. So in the long run, if you had a catastrophic failure, it would be probably way more expensive.
But the incidence of those, not all that common?
No, on a good quality engine that is receiving good maintenance and frequent oil changes, unless they have a weakness, that timing chain can pretty much last the life of the car.
All right, let's go to Ned in Pittsfield. Hi, Ned, you're on.
Hello, Gordon?
Yes.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, hi, thanks for taking my call.
Okay.
My question is, Gordon, I have a 2007 Volvo XC70 wagon, and I had this car aligned possibly three times now in the last month and a half, and I think the people at the garage think I'm crazy. But the car still wanders left, and there is a little bit of play in the wheel. And my question was, beyond an alignment, what could be causing these things
to happen? So the alignment is coming out perfectly, is that what you're saying?
According to the folks doing the alignment, yes.
At any time, did they ever rotate your tires around to see if it changed this pull?
I don't believe so, that there were brand new tires put on.
Yep.
And that was the reason for the first alignment.
This is what I would do. So it's pulling slightly to the left, did you say?
Yes, and when I accelerate, it kind of moves to the left as well.
All right. If you were to take your front tires and cross them, put the left on the right and the right on the left, make sure the pressures are all equal. If the pull now changes direction, it's chasing the tire, or the tire's causing the pull.
So a faulty tire?
Yeah. Maybe not so much as being faulty or defective, but once in a while, we'll put four tires on a car, and the car will have a pull that it never had before. And it's the rolling resistance of that tire is greater than the others.
Oh,
and we do alignments, and a lot of times we'll go on a road test, we'll come back, and we'll swap tires, and then the car goes down the road perfectly because it's a tire causing a slight pull.
You'd think with modern technology the tolerances would be so exact on a tire that wouldn't happen.
Doesn't happen very often. And if they're brand new tires and that tire is the cause of the drift, and they're really brand new, very little wear, I'd get another one replaced under warranty just in case that tire doesn't develop a problem later in its life when the warranty's pretty well worn out.
Could there be any other reason why it goes out of alignment very quickly?
I think it's a tire issue.
Okay.
Unless every time they bring it in, they say, oh, my God, this thing's all out of line again.
No, I think he thinks that I may be off my medication.
All right, Ned. Well, good luck.
Ned, do you have any teenagers driving?
Not this particular car.
All right, okay. Don't ever rule that out.
All right, man. Thanks for the call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Bye now. Well, let's go to Paul in Connecticut. You're on the road. Where are you, Paul?
I'm actually in Connecticut right now, near Sherman, Connecticut.
Okay, well, you're on.
And I'm driving the Prius, and it's the most frustrating thing because I brought it in because the lights, both the high and low beam, were not working on the passenger side. I'm sorry, on the driver's side. And then last night, miraculously, they were both on.
Yeah.
And then they were off this morning. They're on right now. And I don't know why they keep on going on and off. It isn't, I don't know if it's the bulb, but it's.
What year is the car, Paul?
2006.
And how many miles are on it, roughly? Do you know?
Sure. Believe it or not, 266,000 miles and not a bit of trouble.
Are these the original headlight bulbs?
No, I think they were changed at one time.
Does your car have the high-intensity lighting, the HID lights?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Yes.
Not uncommon for what you're experiencing with HID lighting. They almost act like a fluorescent light. They can flicker, they can be on, and then they can be off, and then they can be on. There's a ballast, and I think they call it an igniter that fires those lights on. And the Toyota had some issues with those systems, but you can't rule out the simplest thing as just being the headlights getting tired, and they can act that way. Those aren't cheap. Those aren't cheap bulbs. But my experience with all HID lighting so far has been bulbs only.
What does HID mean?
It's high intensity discharge.
I see.
It's that bright. Some call it a xenon lighting.
Yeah.
You know those lights that are extremely bright coming on, and you're saying, "What is this guy doing to me?"
Yeah, yeah.
But boy, when you're behind those lights looking, they're great.
So basically, to heck with everybody else on the road.
Well, dim them, but other than that, it's great lighting.
It's your fault, Paul. Hey, thanks a lot for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
Bye now. Let's go to Bill in Pelham. Bill, you're on.
Hi guys, thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I have an 06 Honda Odyssey with 167,000 miles on it. I've got a problem that has stranded me, which I didn't think was possible with a Honda. Just about 4 or 5 weeks ago, my battery died during the cold weather, so I went out, jumped it, and it was fine. I thought because it had been sitting for a couple of days. Happened again, and I went to my local shop, not a dealer, and they said, could be the starter, battery seems okay, and so we ignored it. And I got stranded. Car wouldn't start in a parking lot, and after waiting for a tow for a few hours from AAA, I turned the key. It started right up. Took it right to my shop, and they said, you know, they could test it. It was as it was. It didn't start. It was the starter. Replaced the starter. The problem happened again.
Oh boy.
The battery is 2 years old, and it took the full charge. Now, a couple odd things have been happening, which tells me I'm chasing some kind of electrical thing. I just noticed when I drive the car for the first mile or so, my dome light would go on for less than 2 seconds, and my driver's door open little thing on the dashboard would imply that the door was open. And I would open and shut it, and that didn't do it. But then the light would go out, and the door open thing would go off. They checked all of the switches, and they seemed fine. You know, all of the door that turned the lights on, whatever those switches are called. So currently I'm driving around. I don't have my dome lights going on automatically when you open up the door because I don't want to get stranded again. I need my car for my job. So I'm trying to – they're willing to, you know, try and chase this thing down, but we're kind of stumped here. And, you know, to replicate the problem, it may or may not happen. It seems kind of random. This dome light thing going on was – I just noticed it half a dozen times. Don't always notice it. I mean, it doesn't always happen. So I don't want to get stranded again. Where should we be looking? Have you heard of this happening before? What do you think?
Well, this does occur on different cars at times. When you were stranded and decided to give it a try when you were waiting for AAA,
yes.
Did it crank up as fast and strong as usual, just like there was never a problem? Or was it a slow crank?
It started right up, but that was before we put the new starter in.
Yeah, okay. It certainly sounds like that's what starters do. They'll mm-hmm. give you that type of a beginning failure.
Mm-hmm.
I hate not having the car be dead when I, in the case of a starter, I don't want the car to start. I want to know why it won't start. That's the frustrating part. You know, there are always ignition switch issues in the back of your mind, but unless it fails concretely, you hate to guess and throw parts at the car.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, the fact that the dome light goes on and off, could it be something as simple as a very corroded fuse box?
Well, anything's possible because the vehicle's old enough and has enough miles on to where those issues definitely can come into play.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to look at unrelated things or things that don't seem like they could be related. And Ray's really on the right track in terms of making sure all your basic stuff is there. The positive and negative to the battery and also the negative that goes to the body and to the engine or transmission. All those leads, those heavy connectors need to be perfect and other grounds and look for corrosion in places. But I wish I could steer you in the right direction, but but it's one of those things that unfortunately needs to fail and stay failed long enough to test it.
Yeah. And that's how I was fortunate enough to get the new starter because it towed in, you know, the second time and they were able to do it. But as I say, this dome light thing coming on and the fact that it happened again, it's leaving me with a worried feeling, especially, you know, I'm on the road all the time.
Yeah.
Well, here's one last thing just to throw out there. We have certainly had our share of bad parts. So you kind of have to be a little suspicious of the replacement starter because I doubt it was a new starter. It was probably a remanufactured or rebuilt.
No, I think it might have been a new one. For some reason, my gut tells me he had a new one.
You can get new. It's still not that common because they're usually quite a bit more money. But
It was a lot.
Yeah.
But, and he also said, you know, they don't usually carry them because, you know, Honda starters don't go.
No, that's true, too. He's right. Yeah.
All right, Bill, we got to roll here. But do me a favor, if you figure it out, give us a call next month and let us know what happened. That's an interesting mystery. Bobby in South Glens Falls. Bobby, you're up. Only a couple of minutes here.
I have a 2009 Mini Cooper. And frankly, we love it. It's a 5-speed. And it's only, you know, it's only got 40,000 miles on it. But anyway, it had around 38,000 miles. One of those crazy idiot lights came on. We brought it to the dealership, who really liked the people. But they said, you must have accelerated too fast. Carbon is building up in the cylinders, and we have to get rid of the carbon. I don't know. But luckily, even though it was beyond warranty, they fixed it for me. But then they said, you really should add Tektron, you know, a gas additive, because a lot of the gases out there aren't good gases anymore, like, I don't know who has or low end. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Absolutely. I lived through the introduction of fuel injection, and gasoline issues were raising havoc with cars back then because of these deposits. Now it's better now because the gas companies got on board with additive packages. But your big brand stations all have good additive packages, you know, the Shells, the Chevron, Exxon, those. But if you go to an unbranded station, sometimes the additives are very weak. And a car like yours, it's a very good idea to put this Tekron in it. There's different doses. If you read the can, there's a heavy dose for a suspected problem, and then there's light dosing as maintenance. I would put the car on that little regime, and if it runs great, stay with it. Don't overdo the stuff, but read the label.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I had an 89 Jaguar years ago, and it had one of those computers on board. And if I put a particular gas in there, but the minute I did, even the dealership said, this Tektron is not a piece of junk. It's one of the best additives around.
Yeah.
Do you
feel
that's the case?
That's the real stuff.
It's funny, you know, we're out of time here, Bobby, but the first show Gordon ever did after the show, he said, I said, I'm having some issues. He said, put some Tekron in. And I'll tell you, it works. So anyway, thank you, Bobby, for calling. Thanks to everybody who called today. And sorry if you didn't make it through. We left the lines loaded today. Gordon Fricke, always a popular guest here on the show. But he will be back. Thank you once again for calling. Support comes from Hunt, Peach, and Castenson Dental, providing general and implant dentistry to Pioneer Valley families for 30 years in the heart of Amherst on Amity Street. HuntandPeachDental.com. Upper Hudson Maple Association, celebrating the 19th annual Maple Open House Weekends at Sugar Houses across the region, March 22nd, 23rd, and March 29th and 30th, UpperHudsonMaple.com. And Capital Cities Imported Cars, Glenmont, New York, offering new and pre-owned BMWs and Volkswagens, serving the WAMC listening area since 1975, CapitalCitiesBMW.com. Thanks to Zach Malloy, who handled the controls. Anonymous Sandy answered your calls. Our producer, Jessica Blaustein Marshall, back from vacation. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday. Oh, it says here we have a special treat in store, which means they're not telling me what it is. But I'll find out when you find out tomorrow.